My name's Larry Wilkins. I'm with the Alabama Broadcasters Association. And to put your mind at ease, I'm not the FCC inspector. So nothing you say will be held against you so at any point. But we want to cover several things that I think you probably need to know if you operate a broadcast station. How many low-power stations do we have here, people operate? Just about all. We have some full power then, I guess. Full power? Okay. Oh, I have both. Okay. Yeah, there is. There are different classes of stations. Can everybody hear okay? Okay. There are several classes, and when we say full power stations, we're not saying you got to be 100,000 watts. That just means you're anything other than an LPFM, that you're regular Class A or Class C or Class B or whatever the case may be. LPFM still has the same requirement as far as a public inspection file, but there are some technical things that are a little bit different, so we'll cover that as well. As we go through the public file, if there's any questions, make sure that you raise your hand and we'll just stop and answer it, because I want to make sure that everybody is following right along. The big thing that we want to talk about is everybody is very much aware of the Federal Communications Commission. That is the agency that actually oversees all of the technical operations and legal operations of broadcast facilities. It would be sort of a real problem if you didn't have somebody that could actually ride herd on all the frequencies. They not only oversee broadcast, AM, FM, and television, but they oversee the operation of cell phones, satellite, taxi cab drivers, dump truck drivers, anybody that's got a two-way, police department. So they have a huge task that they have to do to maintain all those. You couldn't just open it up to the private sector and say, okay, just pick a frequency and come on. So sometimes the FCC gets a sort of a bad look from different people, especially when they come in, and if they come into your station and they find something that's not exactly right, then they carry with them this little receipt book that says, thank you for your volunteer contribution to the U.S. Treasury. And they fill that out with so many numbers and a dot, you know. So, but their main job is to hand out or to allow different people to have different frequencies for different operations. One of the main things that they do is to make sure that there's an even playing field for everybody that wishes to have a broadcast station, so that everybody's playing on the same level and you're not interfering with somebody else. So that's the way they actually hand it out. They're part of the federal government, obviously, and that's what they do. They oversee the operations. As part of that task, which is a rather monumental task to say the least, they actually have rules and regulations. And in the old days, and I say old days because I've been in broadcasting since dirt, and I helped Tulsa, I think, develop AC generators at one time. But they had to come up with these, and there was a printed version of the rules, and it was about this thick. And periodically, you had to keep one at your station. And I remember there were a couple of companies that actually published those things. Pike and Fisher was one of them. And periodically, they would send you updates. And it was one of these weird updates where you would look in it and say, remove pages 20 through 35 and replace it with 20 through 36A or whatever. And it would take you all day to update that thing. So that was just ridiculous. Now it's actually online. You're still required to be able to have a copy of the FCC rules and regulations at your station. But due to the fact that they're online, you don't have to have a printed copy. You can actually go straight to the FCC website, and you can see an up-to-date, any changes that have taken place the day before will actually be there. So it's current. It's very current. So that's what the FCC actually does. One of the things that they require that all stations have, and this is what, when I was invited to come to speak to you folks today, is the public inspection file. What a public inspection file is a file that contains various documents relative to your station operations, both legal and technical. And the the public, a member of the public, has the right to come in and actually review that public file. And they can see your operation, see your legal and your technical operation to make sure that you're doing what you're supposed to do. If you're not, they can actually, you know, take your license away if you're not doing what you're supposed to do. So one side note, in someone coming in from the public to look at your file, they don't really have the right legally to go through your public file. When they come into your station and want to look at it, you greet them cordially and offer them a cup of coffee or some water and ask them, which one of those folders do you wish to see? And you sit them down at a desk and pull that folder out and they can look at it. That being said, I bet if I had a show of hands here, nobody's ever been to your station and looked at your public file. It just doesn't happen very often. About the only time you have somebody from the public that comes in and looks at your public file is in political season. If you're running political ads, the competition wants to see what the guy that he's running against has been airing, so yes, he can look at that. And then sometimes when it comes up on license renewal time, different people will come by and look at your public file to make sure that everything is doing okay. In the little handout, did everybody get one of the handouts, or are there still some? Okay, there's some more up here on the front if people come in that don't have one. Actually, beginning on page 6 of this handout, There are several folders that are supposed to be in your public file. And I want to just take a few minutes to go down through each one of those and explain what each one of them is supposed to have, and more importantly, how long it's supposed to be retained. There are certain time limits on different things that you have to keep in there. The first folder that you will typically see, and this order that I'm giving them in, It's not mandatory that they be in this order. This is just the way it's listed in the FCC rules, so it just makes it easier to keep them in that order for me. But as long as you have all this information, that's okay. The first folder that you'll see is actually the authorization folder, and that is where you keep your station license and your station renewal. If you have a renewal, the actual station license is what gives you the authority to be on the air. And I can actually show you one here in case, hopefully, you've seen your license and you have it. I have been in some stations before doing some inspections, and they can't find their license, and they don't know where it is, but you can actually get it off the website. This is what the header looks like on a official license. This is an FM station, and as you see, let me turn the little thing here, and you can actually see that it actually has the owner, the owner's name, or the company name right up here at the top. Get up here, right there. This one actually is a station that belongs to a company, Cumulus, and it has the name up there and the call letter and your facility ID. Every station has a facility ID, and that's the way the FCC keeps up with you, because you know yourself you can change call letters every other day if you wish, and a lot of stations do. I knew of one station down in Montgomery, Alabama, that they changed call letters so often. When you would go by the station to get a bumper sticker, you also got a box of crayons, so you could mark through the old call letter and write the new call letter on there. But that's why the commission actually uses the facility ID. That gives you the ability to actually change your call letters if you wish. The second page of the license is actually the most important. This is where all the technical information is, which tells you your call letters, the owner, the city of license, because you may be close to a larger city, like Birmingham here, but your station of license may be in Jemison. Well, when you give your call letters on the air, your ID, you're supposed to say whatever the call letters are and give the city of license first. So if it's here, you could say WLWI, Jemison, Birmingham. But the city of license has to be first. So that's the city of license right there. That's the frequency that you're operating on. This particular station is operating on 92.3. This is a channel assignment, just like television. the FCC has channel assignments for FM stations. Do we have any AM people here, or just all of it? Some AMs as well. You have the same thing. This is the class of operation, and of course everybody is unlimited. Although some AMs may be daytime, not many anymore, but there used to be some daytime only stations, and we still have some daytime. The other important stuff, and I'm just going down through here so you'll know what's on here, and you need to sort of have your technical guy or yourself to look at it and make sure everything is the way it's supposed to be. This tells you how much power your transmitter is supposed to put out. There's no way this particular station is 100,000 watt effective radiated power, but that doesn't mean your transmitter is putting out 100,000 watts. I had a guy ask me one time, he said, what is the power of your station? I said, 100,000. Whoa, you got a 100,000 watt transmitter? I said, no, it only puts out 30. Oh, you have another transmitter up on top of the tower? No. It has to do with the way the gain of the antenna. The more bays you have, the more gain. So we can't, or I say we, I do alternative inspections in Alabama. Myself or the FCC, when they come into your facility to inspect your facility on an FM, there's no way they can check the ERP. I mean, you can't climb up the tower with a meter and read it coming off the antenna. So all this is calculated by your consultant, whoever did the original design of the station, and they calculate how much power you need to put out of your transmitter to get 100,000 watts. That has to do with the gain of the antenna and the loss in the transmission line and all that. And so that gives a figure that you can and the engineer can look at on the transmitter and say, okay, if I'm putting out 31,000 watts, then I'm putting out an effective power of 100,000. So that's really important that you keep that in mind. I have seen a couple of licenses during inspections that area was blank. I don't know how it got through the commission without them typing something in there, whether it was a typo or whatever. And that sort of creates a problem. You have to sort of stop and calculate what it's supposed to be. One particular station I did, and I'm always sharing stories, I hope that's okay, but I went to a station that was blank, and I asked the engineer that was with me, I said, what is your legal power? What are you supposed to run? He said 17,000 watts. I said, okay, how do you know it's supposed to be 17,000 watts? It's not on your license. And he stood there for a minute and he said, the guy that I replaced said that's what it's always ran. And I said, oh, okay, but that's not really legal. You need to know what you're supposed to run. If it's not on your license, you need to go back and look at your information from the consultant or whoever put the station on the air first to see what it's supposed to be. We actually did calculate it there on site. I saw what kind of antenna he had and approximated how many feet of transmission line he had and got out my trusty calculator and calculated out. And believe it or not, it came out right around 17,000. So he was right, but it wasn't on there. This is, tells you what type of antenna you have. This is a Shively antenna, SHI, and how many bays. This is an 8-bay antenna. The 8/3s, most of you will not be involved in this, but this is a multi-station antenna, so there's 8 bays vertically, 3 around. So there's actually 24 bays wrapped around the tower for that. But most of you will have like a 2-bay or 3-bay or 4-bay or 5-bay, but that tells you what it is. This is extremely important here. These are the coordinates where your tower is located. Any of you own renting tower from somebody, or do you own your own tower? Okay. If you're renting space on a tower, then the owner of that tower is responsible for making sure that it's where it's supposed to be, not you. But if you own your own station, you need to make sure that it's where it's supposed to be. The commission over the years has found that sometimes by mistake of the surveyor or the people that built the tower, they put it in the wrong place. One I read about was about a mile in the wrong. It was a mile off from where it was supposed to be. So obviously that causes a problem. I did one day when I was driving down the road and I looked at my GPS in the car, and it was, the tower was supposed to be on the right-hand side of the road, but the tower was on the left-hand side of the road. I said, now, what is the deal? So when I got there, I have a handheld GPS that I took out and placed it at the base of the tower, and sure enough, his coordinates were wrong. He was supposed to be on the other side of the street. So So sometimes that causes a problem. The rest of this tells about how high it is above the ground and above sea level. But these are things that you're supposed to have on your license. What he mentioned a while ago, the antenna structure registration, that is that number right there. Antenna structure registration number. All towers that are over 199 feet have to have a registration from the Federal Aviation Commission. And that's that number right there. That number has to be posted on the fence around the tower, on the tower itself. And if your tower is out in a cow field somewhere and you have to go through a gate to get out to the tower, you also have to put that number on the gate that you have to go through to get out to the tower. Yeah, there are specific rules for tower structures that are within what they call the glide scope of the planes coming into an airport. So even though you're under 199 feet, if you fit into that glide scope, then sometimes you have to light it and paint it and have an authorization to do that. You don't want any planes running into your tower and knocking it down. That would not be very good. And that's what your license actually looks like. So make sure that that license is actually in your public file in the authorization folder. Now, in the olden days, people liked to put those in a frame and hang them on the wall. I guess it looked sort of cool for people to walk in. They could see your license. You can still do that. My recommendation to stations, so that it doesn't get lost or somebody steal it, put the original in the public file and make a copy of it. And if you want to frame it and hang it in the lobby or in the control room, just put the copy. If your transmitter site is away from your studio, which most of them are today, it's also a good idea to make a copy of it and keep it at the transmitter site in case you get out there and you forget some of these numbers. You got them there and you don't have to go and look for them. Any questions on the actual license itself? But that has to be in there. Now, look, if you will, up at the on the first page. It actually shows an expiration date. This one shows April 1st, 2012. You know, you have to renew your license every 8 years. And it varies depending on the state that you're in. It's sort of a staggered thing, so they don't have everybody trying to renew the same year. This is for Alabama, and they renewed theirs in 2012. Well, if you looked at that license, you say, well, his license has expired. It expired at 3 a.m. local time, April 1st, 2012. Well, that goes to the second document that you're supposed to have in your file, and that is the renewal card. What will happen is, on a renewal card, unless you make a major change in your transmitting facility that would affect the antenna or the power or the coverage of your station, they don't send you a whole new license anymore. They send you a renewal card. And as you can see, this one says this station's been renewed and now it's good to 2020, 8 years from 2012. So you'll get that. Those two documents have to stay together. One by the other doesn't give you the legal authority to be on the air. You got to have the license and the renewal. If you keep it in paper form and you have a file drawer in your station, just create you some folders, one of them labeled authorization, and that's where you put the license and the renewal. You can keep it electronically on your computer if you wish. That's fine. Just create you some PDF folders and put these in here. Scan them in, and you can download them from the FCC as well. If you keep them electronically on your office computer and somebody comes in from the public to view it, you have to have a computer that they can sit down at and view them. iHeart, formerly Clear Channel, they've had for years an electronic, what they call EPIF, electronic public inspection file. That's what they do. They keep their public file electronically, and they have a special computer that somebody can come in and sit down at and look at all these documents we're looking at here. They're read-only, so they can't copy them or change them or anything like that. And there's something else coming up that I'll talk about when we get through with these folders that will help you along that line as well. But make sure that you've got your renewal card and your license, and the date is correct. This station will expire in 2020. And 4 months prior to that date, you have to file for another license. Any questions on that? The second folder that you will actually see is application folder. Now, this application folder and the authorization folder are sort of married together, and it says what the word means. It's anything that you have filed with the commission that has not been acted on yet. So when you file your license renewal, that application goes in the applications folder. Once the commission grants your license renewal, you put that in the authorization folder. And if you wish, you can actually take the application out and throw it away because it's a moot point. They've already approved it. But that's what the application folder is anything that you have filed with the FCC that has not been approved. And once it is approved and you get the legal document from the commission, then you put that in the authorization folder. So that's what that is. A citizen's agreement, and I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on this because you'll never see anything in a citizen's agreement folder. That is something that was left over from years ago where you used to enter into specific contracts with specific groups or individuals to do special programming for their cause. And it's one of those things, you know, sometimes the government is slow in doing things, and that's been sitting in there since the 1940s or 50s, and they've never taken it out. The only thing I'll say about this particular folder, if you have any folder that has nothing in it, well, make sure that you have a blank folder. Just put a piece of paper in there with a note that there is no applicable information at this time. What that will do is if somebody comes in to look at your public file, they'll see that you didn't ignore it, that you know that file is supposed to be there, but there's no information that's applicable to it. So it just sort of covers you like that. But you'll never see anything in a citizen agreement. The contour map is the fourth item you're supposed to have, and they're listed on that starting on page 6, so I'm just covering what's in those. The contour map is actually your coverage. Now, we don't have any commercial stations here. Anybody, you do have some commercial stations. I always sort of enforce this with the commercial stations. This is not a sales map. You guys that are in commercial know that sometimes sales map, the people use sort of a fat pencil when they draw it, and the coverage seems to go a little bit further out than it really is supposed to, because you can take it to the Chevrolet dealer and say, whoa, look at all our coverage. You need to buy ads from us. So this is actually a technical map, either created by your consultant, or you can download them off the FCC website if you don't have one. You can go and to the AM and FM query page and actually download that. But it'll have the actual coverage of your station based on the different levels of coverage, the 70 dBU, the 60, the whatever they happen to be. So that's what that's supposed to be. Oh, let me say something about contour, and sometimes I get off on tangents, but remember that when you apply for a station, if you're a Class A and you're running 6,000 watts at a particular height, or if you're Class C and you're running 100,000 watts at a certain height, you've got a particular coverage. Each one of these classes has a maximum mileage that power, and that, like 100,000, if you're Class C, you're allowed to be 100,000 watts not higher than 2,000 feet. So you can go anywhere in between that. But you can actually move up and down on a tower, or if you're Class A, where you're restricted to 100 meters, which is 300 and something feet, and you get on another tower that's 500 feet, well, you can do that, but you back your power down so that that circle stays the same. It doesn't matter what power and what height you are, as long as you don't exceed that circle. The higher you go, the more coverage you'll get, but you can't do that. You got to back your power back down so you stay within that coverage. This is happening on LPFMs a lot and translators, where they got to watch that coverage and make sure that it doesn't exceed. And there again, that goes back to the FCC wanting everybody to play fair and don't overlap your neighbor. You know, you don't want anybody overlapping you, and you don't overlap them and cause interference. So they've got these guidelines set up, and that's why the contour map is so important. When you initially apply for a station, that's how they find where you can have a station. They will look at the contour maps of all the surrounding stations, and they will find a little hole in there where nobody, you can put one right here, at this one point right here on the right, put it on the right side of the road and put it right here and run this much power at this much height, and you won't interfere with anybody else. That being said, over the years, the band's getting rather crowded with all the translators and the LPFMs that are on, so it's very difficult to find to apply for a new station because of that. If you decide maybe you're a Class A and you're running 6,000 watts, and you're at 300 feet, which is what a Class A is licensed to be. But you move to a different tower, and you actually can go up to 500 feet, which means you can reduce your power out of your transmitter, which effectively reduces your power bill. A lot of people like to do that. They can reduce your power bill. Anytime you make a change in power or tower height or antenna, you have to file for a construction permit. The commission will, if it meets your criteria, will approve it. You'll get a construction permit, you'll make the change, and then you apply for a new license at that new location. I had an operations manager at a TV station, a radio station, that was having trouble with his computer, and the IT guy and I went in there to check his computer, and we looked in his delete folder, his trash folder, was just loaded. I mean, he just had tons of stuff in there. Well, the first thing we did was empty that out. That'll clear up some of his hard drive space. Well, he comes in that afternoon. He said, "Where are all my files?" I said, "What files are you talking about?" "The ones that was in the trash bin." I said, "They're in the trash bin. We threw them away. That's where I store all my files." I said, "What an ignorant." I said, "Do you put things at home, what you want to keep in the garbage can? You don't put things that are nice in the garbage can. That doesn't make sense. So don't label your folder trash or somebody will throw it away." As a matter of fact, most people don't even put it in the public file. They'll put it somewhere else in another drawer. If you've ever been driving down the street and the signal goes as you're driving down the street, or you pull up to an intersection and your station goes away, and you pull up about a half a foot and it comes back on, that's just the nature of the business. Signals bounce off of high rises and mountains and stuff that way, so there's not a whole lot that you can do about that. So just because a computer shows it's okay, you really need to go out and take a look. Everybody should have an ownership report. It's a form 323, and the ownership reports are filed with the commission biannually every other year on December 1st. So and they're actually, I think the timetable on the ownership reports, the next one coming up, and this is nationwide. They do this all, every station in the country files at the same time, which is amazing that their computer server will handle all that. But the next one, we just did one in 15. The next one is coming up on December 1st, 2017. You'll have to file a new ownership report, which is simply telling the commission who owns a station, who is the owner. If you sell it to somebody else, it has to reflect the new owner. The political file, if any of you are running political ads, you should have a folder in there where you keep information about anybody that's purchased time on your station for any kind of political announcements. That's right. If you don't do any political, just put a note in there. Yeah, but just have the blank, have the folder there, but just put a note that you don't do any of that. EEO, most of you, I'm sure, don't really come under the EEO. If you have less than five employees, full-time employees, you don't have to do the checking, do all the recruitment and all, like people that the bigger station. But you do have to have the form, I think it's 396. Let me bring it up here and see. When you file for your license renewal, you actually have to file a 396, the equal employment. And if you have less than five employees, there's actually a place down here where you click any more than five. that releases you from the requirement of doing all this recruitment and filing all these forms annually. So, but you do have to keep a copy of the 396 that you formed with your license renewal. Public and Broadcasting Manual, everybody's supposed to have a copy of that. This is what it looks like if you download it from the FCC website. The most current copy is July 2008, and that's just a folder that the commission has. If you go on Google and just Google Public and Broadcasting Manual, July 2008, this will pop up, and you can put that in your public inspection file. Now, if you have multiple stations, that's a good point. If you have multiple stations, like some companies maybe have 5-6 stations, you don't have to have this material in all 6 stations' folders. You can just put it in one and reference the other ones back to that one. So if you have an AM/FM, things that are common between the stations, like the public inspection file, EEO and stuff that way, you can put that in one of the stations and just reference the other ones to it. That just saves paper. You don't have to run off so many copies of stuff. Letters and emails from the public. Real quickly, I'll say that this is probably going away completely within the next year. The FCC has made comments that there is not a lot of interest in doing that anymore. And most people don't get letters anymore. Everything comes in on Facebook or email or stuff. So the commission is contemplating very heavily doing away with it. But at the present time, you should have a folder, and any letters and email, or particularly letters that you receive, not personal letters, but letters relating to your operation of your station, needs to go in there. This one is one I hope there's nothing in yours. If FCC investigation or a complaint against your station, that's where any of that information actually goes in there. Issues and programs. Now, this I want to spend just a couple of minutes. We're about to run out of time. This is a very important folder, and probably the most important folder next to the license that you have in there. What the issues and programs list are, and this applies to LPFMs as well, is when you get a license to operate a station, and I always relate this to a commercial station, but when you are issued a license by the federal government to operate a station, contrary to popular belief, and managers don't like to hear me say this, but it's not to make money. It's to serve the public interest. And as a result of that, it is your responsibility to sort of ascertain by whatever means you see fit to see what the issues are in your community and do some sort of programming on the air to address those. For instance, maybe potholes on Main Street or overcrowded in the schools or whatever it happens to be. I mean, it's just a whole area that it can be. Whatever you see in the community, you might invite the mayor by, or the county school superintendent comes by, or whatever. It's just to show the commission and the public that you're concerned, because you're issuing a license to serve the public interest of the people in your coverage area. And so you just can't sit there and ignore drugs in the school or bad roads or bad government or whatever it happens to be. You have to make some effort to address those. There is no set way to do that. The commission leaves it up to the station. Some people do like a public affairs programming, where they will do maybe a 15-minute program and address things going on in the community. Some people just do it with a live morning show that the county commissioner calls in on Tuesday and you talk to him about things that are going on, just so you keep the public informed. A lot of people ask me, what about PSAs, public service announcements? Those are okay, but you can't use them by themselves. And in a discussion with an FCC inspector one day, I brought that question up. He said, well, the reason we say that is that you could run public service announcements for the Red Cross all day long, but it doesn't show the commission that you as a owner has taken the initiative to see what the issues are in your community and address them. I mean, you're just repeating what somebody else said. So the issues and programs list are very important. These have to be put in this folder once a quarter, January, February, and March, they have to go in by April, 10 days at the end of the quarter. So every quarter you put a list. This is not the documentation of all this stuff. It's just a list of what you did. You say, well, we talked to the county road department about repaving Main Street or something. It's just a list of what you did and the time that you did it. That's all involved in this. So let's hurry right along here. We'll finish up with some other. These are a few other items that you will see in your public file. The local public announcements, that's simply where you, when you file for your license renewal, you know, you have to run these little ads that says, or not ads, but little announcements that say such and such a station has filed for license renewal, and the public file is available for inspection at such and such an address. Well, that's where that announcement goes to. So you actually put that in there. It's only in there around license renewal anyway, so it's not a big deal. These you probably are not involved in at all. Time brokerage agreements, joint sales agreements, that's typically has to do with full commercial stations. And we're about to run out of time. I wanted to cover, now we have run out of time, I think, but I think lunch is available. If any of you have questions, and we took a lot, way too much time on public file, but hopefully we answered some of your questions. But if you have questions about EAS, and things that you need to do, I'd keep you a little longer, but I know your stomach is probably growling because it's, I think they've got a lunch or something. But I'll be around if you have specific questions on EAS. Let me walk through the slide real fast on them, and then that'll whet your appetite. Every station has to have a type-approved EAS box, either SAGE or DAS-DEC. You have to monitor two separate sources. Those sources are assigned to you by your state EAS committee. You also have to monitor the IPAWS network, which comes in on the internet. That's something that FEMA is doing, and you have to monitor them as well. And then you have to have your unit wired up so that it will automatically interrupt your station programming in case there's nobody there or you're unattended. So your program audio will route through these devices, which will automatically interrupt it in case you have that. Real quickly, the things you're required to do, you have to receive a weekly test from both sources and IPAWS once a week. IPAWS runs theirs on Monday at 11 o'clock local time. Number two, you should receive and relay a required monthly test that's issued by your state emergency management office or somebody else, and it has to be relayed within 60 seconds on the air. You have to originate your own. Now, LPFMs are not required to originate their own, and you're not even required to have an encoder, but nobody makes a decoder-only box anymore. So, I mean, these are set up. The DASDEC and the SAGE are actually encoder decoders, but you're not required to originate your own weekly test. But you do have to receive a weekly test from who you're monitoring and relay the monthly. If you receive a national level test or alert, you have to do that, relay that automatically immediately, such as the September 28th test we did. The national test, everybody had to relay that. And you have to log all of this information about EAS in something called the station log. And the commission is very adamant that you have what's called a chief operator, which is not the engineer, or doesn't have to be the engineer, it could be. It can be anybody that they are at the station, the manager, the operation manager, whatever. And the only thing he or she is doing, is looking at this log to make sure that you received the weekly test like you're supposed to, that you received and relayed your monthly test, and if required, you have transmitted your own weekly test each week. So we'll tower lighting and marking, we can talk about that if anybody have any information. Main station location, make sure the main station is where it's supposed to be in lieu of the coverage area. You can't be outside of a certain area, and your consultant has already figured that all out for you. And that's, we run out of time. We could talk all afternoon, I'm sure, on this. But if you have any questions, just corner me, and we'll help you with them during the day.